This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Songs with. Songs with.
Ones we can depend on.
Songs with.
How many of us have them?
Songs with.
Before we go any further.
Songs with.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 7 of Songs with Friends here on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. This is Steve Williams, and joining me as always is Kelly. Kelly, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, because also joining us tonight is our very first guest here on Songs with Friends, a man that has appeared on many podcasts over the years, my friend and yours, good old Will from Texas. Will, how have you been, man?
Hey, buddy, I'm fine. I'm impressed, man. I've been on a lot of podcasts. I never knew that about myself. I'm kind of excited about that.
You know, that's literally the only thing I know about you. So,
if you knew the truth, man, you'd be so disappointed. So that's probably a good thing.
All right. Because Will is our guest, we've let him pick our songs this week. For those of you who are unfamiliar with our format, I imagine that will be a big confirmed main event draw and bring in some first-time listeners. We will go through song lyrics, try to figure out kind of what happened, maybe behind the lyrics of the song, maybe just make some shit up depending on how goofy I'm feeling that day. But today we will start with David Bowie's Quicksand from the 1971 album Hunky Dory. Now, Will, why did you pick this song?
Okay, so real quick. So I've been listening to this album for almost 30 years, but it came out like 20 years before I discovered it, right? So this album's probably, what, it's 71? So it's like 47 years old now, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So, but David Bowie's kind of like one of those timeless guys, right? Who, you know, he's an icon. You know, he's dead now, so he's a dead icon, but he's an icon either way. So it's one of those albums that when I first heard it, I thought, this is one of the best albums I've ever heard. But this song was one of the songs I didn't like when I first heard it when I was young, right? But as I got older, I thought, oh my God, I've had this album in my collection for almost 30 years, and I cannot believe that I did not love this song for the last 30 years. Because there's a bunch of albums, like the one song that almost everybody's heard, if you're a Bowie fan or if you know Bowie, is Changes, right? Changes, right? Everybody's heard that song, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So that's the big hit from the song, or the song that's kind of been played on radio for the last 50 years. All right. Then you have other songs like Life on Mars, which, or Oh You Pretty Things, which are pretty popular, that were like concert mainstays, or that any Bowie fan's going to know. Then you have a song that was like a tribute to Lou Reed. It's called Queen Bitch. And that even appeared, I think, on like Guitar Hero or Rock Band, right? So you have all these great songs on this album that I've loved for years. And this Quicksand song, I was like, it's kind of boring. It's kind of slow. It's really not my thing. But then as I got older and I got gray in my hair and I started questioning my own mortality and my own life and like, how long am I going to live? And like, when you wake up, like every joint and bone in your body aches because you like laid on your shoulder the wrong way, or, you know, like you get lower back pains and you think, oh my God, I am sinking in quicksand. Like, I am going to die soon.
Oh, how old are you?
Oh, I'm 43. Okay. But like, I feel old, right? I just feel old. Like once like all the hair on your face turns gray and you see it every day in the mirror, you just feel like you're sinking in this quicksand. But all of a sudden, the song that meant nothing to me in my youth meant a lot to me in my middle age, right? And so I felt like, hey, this is kind of a song that we really should explore. Like, why is this song so important? You know, why is this song such a great addition to this classic album? You know, one of the few songs that I completely abandoned for so many years. And that's why I picked it.
All right. And now that you say that, that makes perfect sense looking at the opening line. I'm closer to the golden dawn.
Yes. which you know, the sad thing is, because like until I picked the song and then actually printed the lyrics out, I had no idea what he was talking about in this song. So I went to our good friend Wikipedia, and I was like amazed at all of the things I've discovered in this song, right? So the Golden Dawn, all right, it was actually a magical society in Great Britain in which Aleister Crowley was a member. And Aleister Crowley was like this famous like occultist, Satanist. Probably not a Satanist, but like he believed in like witchcraft, and like Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin bought his house, and then all these bad things happened to Jimmy Page because he was in this cursed house. And Aleister Crowley was famous for his orgies and for like, you know, just evil spirits surrounding him. Anyway, so this, when he says I'm closer to the Golden Dawn, he's really saying I'm closer to this magical society in which Crowley, and now I'm wearing Crowley's uniform, like I'm part of this society, you know. And that's what he's saying there. So it has nothing to do with age. Yeah, I just had to throw it out there.
Yeah, the sheer number of historical references in this song, it may be the most I've ever seen. This could have been written by an actual history teacher.
What? Has nothing to do with my dictate.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. I told Steve I had all my history teachers were just coaches that just passed us through. Like, I swear, like, we would have some of them would just have the notes on the board while you took a test. So it was like an easy A. So I never paid attention. So I was hitting up Wikipedia on some of this because I did not know these references.
Well, this is the kind of serious social studies teacher that I am. And I'm left-handed. Right. So as a left-handed person, the most discriminated group of people in history, not just in the world today, but in history. Anytime I see a student writing with their left hand, I give them a free 100 because I know the pain and the discrimination that someone feels by being left-handed.
Oh, so I just have to throw
it out there. That's how serious I take my job. OK, wow. I just want you to know that. But no, but the reality is you're right. Most history teachers are coaches because, you know what they say, if it's not tested, it's not important, right? You know, and most of the time, you know, history classes, social studies classes, they're not tested, so they don't care. So it's like, okay, can you teach volleyball, or can you coach volleyball? Good. All right, we're gonna make you teach world history. Great.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what they do. And then the coaches, and then they'll watch like their idea of teaching American history is watching National Treasure or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's okay. That's okay. I'm not going to confirm or deny that I've ever played National Treasure in one of my classes before. But having said all that, you know, if you're a history teacher and you love history, seeing things like this where, like, Aleister Crowley, like, I was a big Zeppelin fan when I was younger. So, like, I had read, like, The Hammer of the Gods, like, autobiography. So I knew who Aleister Crowley was. And then I go in down this road. Mr. Crowley. You ever heard the song Mr. Crowley from Ozzy Osbourne?
No, I'm not familiar with that at all.
I don't think so.
Okay, on Ozzy's first, on his debut album, he has a song called Mr. Crowley, right? And, it's, you know, if you're an Ozzy fan, it's a famous song. That's about Aleister Crowley. So it's, you know, if you're into rock, heavy metal, whatever, you've kind of... you become familiar with people like Aleister Crowley. So, you know, there's a history lesson there. So when he's talking about the Golden Dawn and Crowley's uniform, he's talking about like the occult, basically. Okay. Which is, brings us to the next line where he says, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality. Himmler was like one of Adolf Hitler's to-do guys, right? He was like an SS officer and, you know, this yes man who was kind of like responsible for the Holocaust. Not saying that, you know, he designed the Holocaust, but he's considered one of the most brutal mass murderers in history. Like he set out to ensure that as many Jews were killed as possible in the Holocaust. That's Himmler, right? So he says, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality. If you know the history of Himmler, he was actually a guy who was like involved in the occult, right? He's a guy who like believed in all this stuff that kind of like Aleister Crowley believed. So, you know, he's tying this mysticism and this occult worship that he references Crowley with Himmler, who also supported that kind of thing. So there's a little lesson there. Just throwing that out there.
See, the people thought they were getting a podcast, and they have been sat under the learning tree.
Hey, you know what? My dad is going to love this episode, so it's awesome.
The kids
will be excited.
You know, you got to make morning fun for the kids. I get it. It's cool.
Hey, you know what's crazy is that, like, later on, he says, I'm the twisted name on Garbo's eyes, living proof of Churchill's lies. I'm destiny, right? This is crazy because, like, for all these years that I've heard this song or heard that verse, I thought he was talking about Greta Garbo, right?
You know? Did too.
Yeah. No, it has nothing to do with Greta Garbo. I was like, because the reality is, if we're talking about a golden age film star, obviously the eyes would belong to Betty Davis, right? Not Greta Garbo. Anyway, so I was just making a Betty Davis eyes reference. Anyway, are we going to do that song later?
You know, maybe in the Patreon special extended footage, the director's cut.
So check this out. There was this spy in World War II. His name was Juan Pujol, right? All right. And I learned this from Wikipedia like 2 days ago. I was completely shocked. This guy, Juan Pujol, was a Spanish spy who was so offended by fascism and so offended by the Nazis and Franco in Spain, who was a dictator, that he became a double agent for both the British and the Germans. Like, he went to the Germans, made it seem like he was a Nazi sympathizer, got in good with them, and then proceeded to undermine them for like years, you know, and help the British and the Americans stay one step ahead of the Nazis.
Oh,
you know? Yeah. That was, so he says, go.
I was going to say, this was the one Wikipedia page I read, was the Garbo reference. And yeah, this whole double agent stuff amazed me that, you know, back then he was able to put together the intel without all the technology that the spies would have now.
Invented somebody. And then, you know, so the Nazis went like follow up and realized this guy wasn't a real person. He invented somebody, had that person die, then convinced the Nazis to give his widow a pension. His made up widow got a pension. You know, that's how great he's a bad. He was he's like, I don't know if it was he I forgot because it was Wikipedia and I just read it. But he got the Iron Cross from Germany, right, for his help to the Germans, which was all bullshit. And then they turned around and then he got like an award from the Americans or the British, like the Medal of Honor or something. I don't know. So he's the only person, like, you know, to get both from like the Nazis and like the Allies. So when he says living proof of Churchill's lies, like, is he saying that Garbo, who's this double agent, is proof that like Churchill had to lie and use double agents in the war to win it? Like, I don't know, man. I'm torn.
And you know, that could tie into the lyrics right before that when he says, I'm frightened by the total goal, drawing to the ragged hole, and I ain't got the power anymore. No, I ain't got the power anymore. I think that kind of ties in this struggle, this almost, you know, warring within yourself, you know, which, you know, of portraying the realm, being frightened by the goal and not knowing if you have it within yourself to carry this goal on. That almost ties in too with Will's earlier statement of getting older, you know, kind of seeing the war scars on yourself as you're getting out of bed and feeling the 40 some odd years of aches and pains and creaks.
Yes. And what's crazy is he wrote this song when he was like, what, 25 or something? I don't know, 23?
Ziggy Stardust was probably 212 years old.
That's true. Well hung with the Snow White tan. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Like, but I mean, like, I could never write these lyrics, right? You know, like, I mean, I'm 40-something years old, and I'm looking back at, like, when I was 23 years old, and I was kind of drunk all the time. trying to figure out how I was going to pay rent like every month, you know, and like I was like, man, I probably wasn't writing lyrics like this, you know, and it's just like, I don't know, like, I mean, he's throwing out these things, right? And, you know, so we get these World War II references, we get these satanic cult references, and then, you know, and before we get to the chorus, which to me is like this very powerful statement, like, then we go to like a later verse where he says, I'm not a prophet or a Stone Age man, just a mortal with the potential of a Superman. So once again, I went down that rabbit hole of Wikipedia, right? And then, like, so he's talking about Nietzsche, okay? And Nietzsche had this idea of the Superman or the Ubermensch, right? And, what would happen is that people would lose their faith, they would stop believing in God, and that the Superman, the all-powerful being, would be man, but the Superman, right? That they would take over, and then we would have, like, this, like, golden age of, like, of existence, right? But in order to do that, you have to kill off bullshit faith or religion, as he would say. I mean, this is heavy shit here.
Right.
You know, this is like the death of God has to happen in order for the Superman to take over. Like, that's crazy, man. I mean, I don't know. Like, at 20 something years old, like Boy was, there's no way I could have thought of something like that. I just wasn't that smart, you know. And so, you know, so anyway, I really wanted to tie that into this.
All right, Kelly, you have anything to add to that?
Oh, it's making me laugh. No, I mean, I saw just about that part. I actually did on the losing the, you know, your faith or your religion. I kind of took that from that too. But like you said, at that age, that's kind of shocking. I wasn't thinking about his age at all when I was reading any of these lyrics. But you know, when you're in your early 20s, living the rock and roll life, and probably doing some drugs, I guess it gives you some ideas. I don't know, but
yeah, I just looked Bowie was 24 years old at this time.
Yeah. I would just like to go on the record to say that I've never done a drug in my life. Okay, thank you. All right.
Going back, he says, I'm torn between the light and dark, where others see their target's divine symmetry. Should I kiss the viper's fang or herald loud the death of man? Will, do your thing, man.
I think it just ties into what we talked about earlier, the death of man, right? Like, you know, that or herald loud the death of man. Like, in order to achieve this supreme state, right, this golden age, you have to kill the current and then create the new. That's the only thing I'm going to guess. Now, should I kiss the viper's fang? I don't know, man. Maybe that's some kind of weird sex cult thing going on. I don't know.
Well, and you know, too, it could tie in with the earlier Himmler reference. If this is possibly from somebody within the Nazi camp who is torn about, you know, maybe they don't feel the same way as everyone else does. Should I kiss the viper's fang and go along with this evil that I don't agree with, or herald loud the death of man, being the Jews or, you know, whoever they're targeting at that time? I see a lot of internal struggle here with these lyrics.
Wow, man. I never thought of something. That's deep, man. Like,
Steve the philosopher.
Well, man, I feel like you're like Timothy Leary and I'm like Cheech and Chong right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, wow. I was just trying to like throw back a little bit of background, but you're like, you're digging deep here, Steve Williams. Like, this is intense, man.
Well, man, just from my personal experience, I graduated high school in 2000, and we always had army recruiters just around all the time. And they were always, the big pitch was, oh man, nobody messes with us. We're a superpower. You know, come join the army. We'll feed you well. We'll pay for your college. And a good friend of mine took the plunge. He signed up for 4 years in the army. And of course, 9/11 happens the next year. And he's going to war and he's writing back to me about the bullshit he's seeing over there. You know, he signed up all full of piss and vinegar. But then we saw the realities of what was happening. He's like, man, this is not great over here. I relate this section of the song very much to the letters I was getting way back then.
Wow. That's deep.
Yeah.
And I'm not even being like, you know, sarcastic when I say that.
No.
That's heavy shit, you know? I mean, and I never took it that personally, you know? Like I said, I thought it was some like kind of like sexual deviant thing.
You know, me being forever 14 years old, that was the first thing that I thought too.
Yeah.
And then just now rereading it, that hit me.
What? The heavy sexual shit?
No. The heavy sexual shit stays with me.
Oh, okay. I got you.
No, the more possible Nazi era tie-in. Keep in mind, 1971 was not that far removed from World War II.
Well, not only that, but like David Bowie, like in some of his interviews, like later on, would like even like endorse fascism, you know, like, so like when you're looking at these lyrics, you're like, oh man, like what side is he on?
You know, in the first verse, it was the vibe I got. I'm like, holy shit. a little behind the curtain, Will picked a song, and once we looked into it, we're like, no, there's no way this is happening. And this was the second choice. And I'm like, oh, shit, he did it to me again.
Oh, man. And then he gets even deeper, right? He says, if I don't explain what you ought to know, you can tell me all about it on the next Bardot. Dude, I had no idea what a Bardot was. Did any of y'all, I'm just throwing that out there, as an educated, college educated man with a degree, did y'all know what a Bardot was?
I looked into it, but this was at work, and I don't recall now, so.
Mm-mm.
No, but did you know what it was just looking at the
word? No, just
no. No, no, no.
Yeah, so this is what Wikipedia says. It says, it's an intermediate, transitional, or liminal state between death and rebirth. It's a concept which arose after the Buddha's passing. So now he's getting away from the occult. He's getting away from this Nietzsche philosophy, and he's going to Buddha, man. He's like, okay, in the next transitional state between death and rebirth, we're going to have this, you know, we're going to have this talk. What's our mortality? What's going to be the state of existence and the beyond? He's saying, hold on, let's talk about it in between death and rebirth. That's pretty heavy, man.
Yeah, just hanging out in limbo there is shit.
Yes. and so we've kind of like gone through this little mini history lesson, philosophy, religion lesson, right, in these verses. But let's go to the chorus. Don't believe in yourself. Don't deceive with belief. Knowledge comes with death's release. Okay, that's what I've been listening to for the last few years, loving this song, right? Is don't believe in yourself. Don't deceive with belief. Knowledge comes with death's release. As I get older and I start to see my own mortality fade, right? And I start to say, man, what's going to happen? Okay, don't get caught up in thinking that you're going to live forever, right? Don't believe that you're invincible, and just know that once you release yourself to death, that's when you'll know, like, that. And it's kind of this weird, like, hey, there's going to be something in the afterlife, right? So right now, as we're talking, Bowie, who just died, is in the Bardot, right? He's in that intermediate transitional period between death and rebirth, because he hasn't been reborn yet. And so he's telling somebody in the Bardot all about this thing that's going on in these quicksand lyrics. Think about that.
Or maybe Bowie is a ghost who's sitting in your room right now.
Dude, that would be the most badass thing of all time.
Sipping, right? sipping some tea and nodding his head in agreement.
Dude, I Texas. Like to think that he is doing like a line of cocaine, okay? And, you know, that he's strumming an acoustic guitar talking about the moon landing. Okay, that's just me, though. All right.
It was a great tie-in, though, with these lyrics and the fact that David Bowie has been dead for, what, just about a year now, I would think.
Yeah, and nobody's come to reclaim his spirit. Not there's not one musician out there that you can say, yeah, Bowie's reborn. That dude's right. Cool. You know. So I believe right now David Bowie is in the Bardot talking with somebody about these lyrics.
All right, and the next few lines here we've already kind of covered. It actually looks like we've pretty much hit the rest of the song. He does keep coming back to this line of, I'm sinking in the quicksand of my thought, and I ain't got the power anymore. So it really is tying in with this internal struggle, more of a physical breakdown. I think this is somebody who's seen some shit, and the weight of what he's seen and what he's experienced is really
at
making
24
him,
years old.
At 24 years old is making him get just crazy introspective. At 24 yeah. years old, you know, I was collecting Ring of Honor DVDs. You know, I was not thinking this seriously.
Wait, are you still? I think you're still doing that. I'm just kidding.
Man, we're in a digital age now. I pay $9.99 a month for the award-winning WWE Network, and I listen to podcasts. That's what I do.
Dude, and what were you doing at 24, Kelly?
You know what? I was just going to school still, actually. It kind of took me a while to get through college, and that's about it. I was married then, and yeah, definitely wasn't thinking about this kind of stuff, I'll tell you that. So.
Oh, so you were definitely sinking in the quicksand. You were
yeah. Yes. We can relate on that topic. So, yes, that's I was Not then I wasn't, but I came to find that quick. Yeah, but I came to find that quicksand. So
yeah,
no, well, definitely not thinking like this. I mean, when I was first reading the song, I was just thinking maybe he was, I don't know, like selfishly only seeing the world through the way, like his eyes, and didn't want to get to know the rest of the world. I don't know why I saw it that way, but actually now I see it very differently. So, and that, you know, with death, maybe you'll have some clarity. I think when anybody gets faced with that, when you get to the end, like people that are sick or they're terminal, I feel like they are, I don't know, I feel like they do get some clarity looking back at their life, but that's hard to have at 24. So.
Yeah. Hey, and you know, we've talked about this for what, about 20, 25 minutes now, right?
Yep.
And I think it's all complete bullshit. I just think he was stoned out of his gourd and he was just like writing down words randomly, because Bowie was also known to do that. Like, and maybe it was later on, like during his pinups, Aladdin Sainer, but he would take words and randomly put them together, like toss up a bunch of words and let them fall and kind of like randomly put words together. And he might have done that here. Okay, I'm just saying.
So it's also how I do my annual employee evaluation at work.
Satan and sex cults. It might be all bullshit. I'm just saying.
Hey, know. That is a sound theory, because it was the 70s. And I'm just glad that we picked a song that was not 14 minutes long.
That's next show, man. I got a 14 minute song. Okay, it's from a band called Yes. Okay. And it covers an entire side of an album. Hey, that's not true, man. I'm never gonna do a Yes song with you guys.
A quick sidebar: when I was in seventh grade, our teacher made us watch the MTV Rockumentary hour-long special about Yes.
Oh, that's painful. I like Yes. But
that is Kentucky's taxpayer dollars at work right there.
You know what I am thinking, though? Like, because I really love this song, right? I love the acoustic guitars. For anybody who's out there, actually, if you're a fan of The Cure, at Bowie's, I want to say it was Bowie's 50th birthday party. 50th sounds right. It was 1997. So I think he had like a 50th birthday party in Madison Square Garden. And he does a duet with this song with Robert Smith of The Cure. And it's really like a great version of this song. And I really enjoy this song and, like, you know, this idea of, like, you know, just releasing yourself to death and whatever. But then I was looking at these lyrics and I'm being honest with you, Steve, I've loved this song for several years. I've never paid attention to the lyrics. Right. And now I'm thinking, as I'm looking at these lyrics with Himmler and Churchill Lion and Bullshit Faith, I have been loving a fascist, satanic, Orwellian love child all these years. And it's really messing with my head that, like, you know, I didn't even think, like, hey, I probably shouldn't love this song as much as I do, because there's pretty messed up shit in here, you know?
And Steve, we figured that out about a bunch of songs, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, there have been times when Kelly has mentioned something about a song, and I thought, oh, now that you say that out loud, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Like, give me an example.
It's kind of a lame one, but the first one that came to mind was this Kelly Clarkson song, Because of You. I think it's our second or third show. It's a song that is clearly about how fucked up her relationship is with her parents. And this whole time, I assumed it was some boyfriend, husband thing. I'm like, oh, no, these parents have screwed her over. It makes perfect sense now.
Well, they let her get on American Idol, right? And just kind of paraded her around like a little puppet. Oh, no. She did. She was pretty successful.
Yeah,
right?
And I think she was older when she went on. I don't know how old. Well, how old was she
when she went that old? Because she was doing 16. Like Kelly Meets Justin or whatever that beach party special movie was. What was that called?
She was in her early 20s, like 20. I think she's a year or two, maybe even older than I am. But I'm 36 now.
Yeah. We were just saying how underrated she is as a singer. So are you here to bash her?
No. I'm not here to bash Kelly Clarkson.
Okay.
She is a muse for our times. I don't,
absolutely.
I don't listen to Kelly Clarkson.
That's what I was thinking more than anything.
When she covers David Bowie's Rebel Rebel, I'm all over it. Okay, actually, that would be horrible. Please don't never cover David Bowie's Rebel Rebel, Kelly Clarkson. Please don't. Wait. That reminds me, you know, of like I was watching VH1 like I don't know 15 years ago, and like Celine Dion covered AC/DC's "You Shook Me All Night Long."
Oh no.
And it was the only, man, Steve, we watched a lot of garbage wrestling in our time, where, you know, and bad angles, but it was really the only time I ever wanted to throw a remote through my TV.
The only time?
And now I'm thinking, if Kelly Clarkson did Rebel Rebel, it would be pretty bad, and I might feel the same way.
Yeah, that's the worst, when you have somebody who's very good in their skill set, but then they try to apply it to something that just does absolutely not work. And you end up with just something that may look good on somebody's paper, but it sure as shit is not mine.
Oh, it was the worst. Do not look up Celine Dion's "You Shook Me All Night Long."
All right.
Do not look for that song on YouTube.
That okay? is noted. And now we're going to move on to our second song. Not quite as heavy on the World War II references. This
I don't know, man. I can find it in the darkness. In the darkness, yes. Dude. What's darker than World War II?
This done. Is from the 1979 album Dynasty. This is "I Was Made for Loving You" by Kiss. Will, why did you pick this song?
Okay, for two reasons, right? Okay. One, my buddy Charles and I were having this conversation the other night. This is a true story. This is no bullshit. All right, we're having this conversation, and he's sending me links of articles. Can y'all hear me? Am I still coming through?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This song, all right, is these like putting disco elements in their songs to make them sell, right?
Yes.
And my buddy Charles was sending me these links, basically saying there were, like, at the end of the 70s, there was this disco sucks movement. Have y'all ever seen like the footage of that, of like these long haired, like rock and roll, like 20 something guys throwing disco records into a bonfire at Comiskey Park?
Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
I was about to say at the baseball park. I seem to remember a steamroller being involved and all kinds of crazy shit.
Yes, all of that. And so when that happened, my buddy Charles was sending me this link to basically saying that this movement was a movement, you know, that was very anti-gay, anti-Latino, and anti-black. And I was like, wait a minute, man. Like, those are my people, right? You know, like sometimes it's not about, you know, the social aspect. It's just about the music. People don't want disco in their rock and roll, man. And like, this is Kiss. This is a band that gave us like the God of Thunder and Mr. Speed and Shout It Out Loud and Rock and Roll All Night and Black Diamond and all of these like songs, right? And Blood Spitting Demons. 1979, they're giving us disco with Paul Stanley's falsetto. I can't get enough. And you're like, what the hell is this? I mean, okay, it's a popular song. It's a top 20 hit, right? It reached number 11 on Billboard. It was number one in Canada, number one in the Netherlands, right? Number two in Australia. Okay. So it's a big hit worldwide. But it's like, this isn't what I want for my rock and roll. So I picked this song because I kind of want to analyze, like, was the disco sucks movement, this anti-gay, anti-Latino, anti-black, like, discriminatory thing? Or was it just a response to like all of our favorite rock bands or rock artists putting disco elements in so that they could sell records?
Now, Will, did you know that this song was essentially the result of a bet made by one of the members of Kiss?
I read that, man. I think that's a story that was invented later on when Kiss was trying to retain its rock credibility after releasing two disco albums.
You know, this was around the time Kiss was doing that Mars movie and all that other bullshit, so it's entirely possible that it was just part of a hard left turn into Bullshitville that Kiss was making at the time. I'm going to choose to believe that that it was a bet, just because it was, just musically speaking, so out there compared to everything else they were doing. But it is an unproven theory at this point.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say. As a Kiss historian and a former member of the Kiss Army, okay? All right, and I say former just because. I was actually never a member of the Kiss Army. I just wanted to throw that out there, like I had some credibility
well,
on the issue.
Pay the $4.95 to get your little iron-on patch.
I want the iron-on patch. Check this out. So, like, in 1978, right, the Kiss members each released a solo album, okay? And the most popular one by far was Ace Frehley's solo album.
Yes.
And for the most part, you listen to it, man, it is Kiss rock and roll. It is drums, bass, guitar, guitar solos, loud, bombastic rock, okay? But he threw in a cover song, New York Groove, which kind of had this, like, funky guitar riff to it and the sing-along chorus, and it became this top 40 hit. New York Groove was a legitimate top 40 hit. And by far, Ace Frehley's album outsold all the other members. Paul Stanley also had, like, this rock and roll album, but, you know, it kind of, like, it was like, hey, ladies, I'm here to seduce you. I'm Paul Stanley, rub my hairy chest kind of thing. Or, hey, I'm going to throw everything out there that I possibly can, like a cover of Jiminy Crickets, When You Wish Upon a Star, or, hey, let's have Cher and Diana Ross, both women that I have, like, slept with and been hanging out and living with. Let's have them do backup vocals on a song. And let's do sing-alongs. And let's do acoustic ballads. And let's do weird songs with strings. And he just threw out this kind of, this weird, I want to call it avant-garde, because a lot of the songs are very singable. They're not like Yoko Ono albums or anything. But this weird album that you're like, if you're a Kiss fan, you're like, what the hell is this? That's supposed to be the God of Thunder. You know, he's not supposed to be like singing When You Wish Upon a Star and I'll See You Tonight. And anyway, so you have that album. And then you have Peter Criss, who decides, hey, I want to do like this 1950s throwback album with a little bit of disco in it. And it was by far the worst selling album. It sounded nothing like Kiss. Had nothing. There was no hard edge to it at all. It was an embarrassment to the Kiss logo, whatever you want to call it. And so the band was already splintering apart because it's like, wait a minute, this guitar player, Ace Frehley, had the most popular album, but he's not the leader of the band. Ace and Paul and Gene are the leaders. They're the lead singers. And they didn't even have the most popular album. Ace did, and he had the top 40 hit. And so I think once Paul Stanley saw that, he's like, well, shit, I can write a top 40 hit. So, you know, and I think that's honestly what happened, you know? And it's like, what's the best way to make a top 40 hit? Hell, if Ace did it, you know, doing a little dance song, then we can do it, you know? And that's what I think happened.
And I will say the video for this really gives that theory some credence, because this video is just 4 minutes of getting eye fucked by Paul Stanley.
Yes.
Looking you right in the eyes. Just like, I felt like he wanted inside me after watching this video.
Dude, okay. So this makes me, like I said, man, I know Kiss history, right? All right. So when he tells you this, tonight I want to give it all to you. In the darkness, there's so much I want to do. That's probably true, man. Paul Stanley probably, you know, had sex with a lot of ladies. And then he says, tonight I want to lay it at your feet, right? All right, now let's stop here. So Paul Stanley wrote this, right? Now, if you've ever read Peter Criss's autobiography, do is lay it at your feet, okay? Because the one thing Peter Criss is very proud of is the size of his junk, okay? I'm telling you this, all right? And he actually rated the members of Kiss and their member sizes, and Paul Stanley came in third. So, you know, Peter Criss and Ace Frehley, thumbs up. Paul Stanley, and then Gene Simmons, good thing you have your tongue. Like, that's basically what Peter Criss said in his book, okay? So when he says, and tonight I want to lay it at your feet, according to Peter Criss, not me, Peter Criss's book, look it up, completely false. Just like that.
Will from Texas, noted historian, is giving us the scoops here of the member size of the Kiss members. My goodness, what the hell is going on here?
I just had to throw that in there, man.
All right, so, man.
Talking about Crowley's uniform and Himmler and, you know, the Superman Ubermensch. Wait, we're on the next song.
Hey, it was the freewheeling 1970s. There's a pretty good chance that David Bowie could have corroborated this theory of the size of the Kiss cocks.
Yeah.
And David Bowie, known for being well hung. Yes. True. Okay, good.
The members of KISS would have been ranked 2 through 5 because David Bowie would have been number 1.
Wow.
Yeah. So there we go.
All right.
I don't know. See, Peter Criss is pretty proud, man.
So like, then he says, but anyway. Because girl, I was made for you, and girl, you were made for me. He's like, all right, I got this thing. I'm going to lay at your feet. But looking at things, say, I'm not the first person who's been here.
That's deep, but not as deep as Peter Criss is. Anyway, go.
So he's like, all right, I got this thing, and looking at you, you've been here before. So let's make this happen.
Dude, I think the show's gone off the rails.
It's the best possible scenario is going off the rails. That's what we're here for, Will.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Kelly, what say you?
Normally, I try to bring us back. I'm so distracted with all this talk right now, so I don't really know. I try to bring Steve back to somewhere normal, but this song is really just, I mean, you know, for lack of a better word, about fucking the whole song. So it's like, I don't really know what else to add to that.
All right. I was made for loving you.
Hold on.
Go ahead, Will.
Now, let me ask Kelly this. Have you ever heard any of like KISS's rock songs or like popular? Okay. Yes. So you have Detroit Rock City, Rock and Roll All Night.
Yes.
Like you've heard Lick It Up and Heaven's on Fire and all. So, and then you hear this, like, okay, so if you did not know that KISS sang this song, would you think that this was a KISS song?
No. But okay. I don't know enough about KISS. You know what I mean? I feel bad admitting that to you because you're such a hardcore fan right now. But okay. I don't know a lot about them. Like, for some reason, they just never really, I never really was, like, into them. You know what I mean? As much as other bands from that time period. So, well, yeah, I don't know. See, the first time I listened to it, I put the video on. So now I can't even answer that question because I didn't even know it. I had to listen to it this weekend. So I put the video on. So it's kind of unfair. And I knew it was their song. So I can't really answer that fairly.
Okay. But what I'm saying, though, is that, like, as someone who listens to music, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, if you hear this song, there's nothing in it that makes you think, okay, this is KISS. Even Paul Stanley's voice, it's not like Detroit Rock City, you know.
Yeah.
It's like la, 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 la. You know, it's just, it's not the same. So what I'm saying, though, is that, like, they made a clear and conscious effort to have a top 40 hit and to change the sound of what it opened up this thing where, you know, like, you'll hear people say that, you know, if Dynasty was the first album they heard from KISS, then they liked the album. But if you were a KISS fan before Dynasty, it completely shut them out of the KISS universe, you know. And it's like, so when you hear this, like my buddy Charles, he said, you know, like, hey, you know, this thing that was happening, it wasn't a rejection against the music. It was this rejection against gay culture, Latino culture, Black culture, you know, for you know, embracing the disco movement. Like, so me as a KISS fan, I have to think, man, if I want to hear the God of Thunder and, you know, Rock and Roll All Night and Black Diamond and Cold Gin and all these old songs, and I'm getting this and the follow-up single, which is called Sure Know Something, which is just as disco-fied and danceable or, you know, whatever, I'm going to be angry and I'm going to want to burn this record.
Yeah. You know? No, I think that happens to a lot of people, like when they like an artist and they change. You know, I don't know if you listened to our episode about, I don't think it's out yet. I have a mad love for Aaron Lewis of Stain. Like, you know, I'm madly in love with this guy. But anyways,
right. So when he butchered Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence, like, upset. I got you.
Keep going. Like in the country thing, you know, I was like, what the hell? You betrayed me. But I think a lot of artists, and
like Hootie went country. What the hell?
Well, and I think a lot of artists do maybe what they have to do to make money, or they do what they have to do until they have enough money to really do what they want to do. You know what I mean? Like, maybe somebody really kind of wanted to be country, but it, you know, they made rock and they made money off of it. And then after a while, they're like, I have enough money. You know, I'm going to make what I want to make now. So, but I get mad at people for that for sure.
No. Okay. Now check this out. So that reminds me of something. So like, Okay, so like, you know, like the glam metal movement of the 1980s, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, with the big hair and the makeup and the Bon Jovi and Poison and all that stuff, right? There was this band called Keel, K-E-E-L, right? And Keel had like the song that was called The Right to Rock. Like they would like play these like kind of hard rock songs with the big hair and the makeup and everything. Never really made it, didn't have any top like 40 albums or anything. They weren't that popular, but popular enough for like metalheads to know who they were on Headbangers Ball. And so they were doing like this VH1 special. I always bring VH1 up because I love VH1, right? And
you're not the first one. I've been known to do that on this show.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Excellent, Steve. We're thinking alike. Yes. And so they did this VH1 special of like, you know, like this transition of what happened to these bands and what happened when grunge took over and when all these hair metal bands lost their record contracts. And they interviewed this guy, Keel, and like, I want to say like one of his band members was like putting up billboard signs with the roller, you know, and like,
yes.
Maybe it was another band.
No, I remember that. Yes, it was. It started on MTV and then VH1 picked it up because I remember they interviewed Lita Ford like on the beach.
Ron Keel, they interviewed him with the cowboy hat and he says, yeah, and now I'm playing my true love, country and western. Yes. Nashville. It's like, dude, you were the one who said we got it, A Right to Rock. And now you're saying, I'm out here in Nashville playing my country music. And you're like, what the hell did that come from? What happened to, like, the right to rock? Get out of here. You know?
Well, Steve and I have a theory on the country thing. So, right, Steve? People that listen to country buy CDs still, we think. Because they don't have access to good internet. I think that's how Steve put it on one episode.
Holy shit, you just declared war on rural America. What the hell?
No, nah, man.
I think you worded it a little differently, but...
No, when we did the Lionel Richie episode, it came up that Lionel Richie has a damn country album out.
Yes, he does.
And I thought, why the hell would... And then I noticed the trend of Darius Rucker going to country, and apparently Keel going to country. I was trying to think, all right, what could it be that makes you decide?
He's out there, you know, putting up billboard signs right now with his buddy. I'm just saying.
You know, what makes you decide after 40 fucking years of being a Commodore that now you're going to hang out with Brad Paisley? I'm like, that's it. The rest.
Wait, time out. Who's Brad Paisley?
You're better for not knowing that. He's one of those new age shitty country guys.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
That's where I got excited, man. I saw it on CBS that night. It was going to be Lionel Richie and friends in concert. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. We're going to get Smokey Robinson. And no, it's fucking Travis Tritt.
Can't get cool in the game.
Right.
We're going to, oh, man, I'm excited. We're going to get Michael Jackson's hologram, yeah, like doing We Are the World.
When did Lionel Richie start hanging out with fucking Toby Keith? Like, when did this happen? But we figured out that you know, in the rural areas they don't have good internet access, so they're not streaming and shit like the rest of us are. Downloads are sketchy,
man.
On top of that, they're naturally resistant to technology anyway. So yeah, that's my we're lucky they're not buying country tapes at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, enough of the oh god, it's gonna get me pissed off all over again.
Yeah, no, we have good internet here in San Angelo. I know that much, but you know.
Hey, full disclosure, right now as we speak, I have bad internet. I'm just throwing that out there. Okay.
Hey, and this past weekend, those of you who follow me on Twitter will know that I went on a bizarre, bizarre trek into mid-90s housewife country music. Martina McBride and bullshit like that. So yeah, I don't have any moral ground to stand on right this moment, but let me cleanse my soul for a few weeks and I'll get back to you.
So yeah. So next time I join y'all like on episode 17 or something. Okay.
You want to come back. Okay.
We're going to do country songs. Okay.
You know, I'm all in on a themed episode. I can get down with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we were talking about Kiss, I Was Made for Loving You. So we're going to get back into it here with Tonight, I Want to See It in Your Eyes. Now, I'm assuming that he's talking about a feeling or an emotion. And not wanting to, you know, classing it up a little bit, seeing it in her eyes, so to speak.
Don't do that. Don't do that to people.
That's a good way to make sure there's no second date.
Oh, my gosh, on the first date. definitely don't do that on first date.
Kelly, it's 2018. The kids are moving fast now.
I guess. I'm super out of the loop of life. You know this, so.
Feel the magic. There's something that drives me wild. And tonight, we're going to make it all come true. I think tonight we're going to make it all come true is not an accidental choice of words. In the 70s, there were all kinds of double entendres so they could get it on the radio. Essentially, he wants to make this woman have an orgasm, and he's just putting it out there on this disco track.
Okay. So let me interrupt here.
Yes.
Okay. The co-writer of the song was a guy by the name of Desmond Child. Have you ever heard of Desmond Child?
Negative.
Like, I mean, and this is a guy that, like, is a, I mean, he's written a lot of popular songs, or co-written, okay? Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, I Hate Myself for Loving You. Listen to this. Bon Jovi's, You Give Love a Bad Name, Living on a Prayer, Bad Medicine, okay? Aerosmith, Dude Looks Like a Lady, Crazy. Ricky Martin's, Living La Vida Loca.
That is a long-ranging catalog.
This is a long range of songs or bands ruined by Desmond Child. Popular songs.
Gosh.
Okay. But look at like Aerosmith. Aerosmith is like Mama Kin and Big Ten Inch and, you know, Rocks and Toys in the Attic. And they come along and it's Dude in an Elevator or Dude Looks Like a Lady or Love in an Elevator. It's
Dude in an Elevator.
Elevator. I like Crazy, so I know you're about to go there, but I heard that. Horrible.
That is the nadir of Aerosmith. By that time, I was out. I was done. It was like I wanted.
That's so awesome. That's funny.
Fuck me, Dude in an Elevator is going to be the name of this episode. That's too good.
write that down.
All right, so he goes back into. I was made for loving you, baby, and you were made for loving me. Essentially, this is a man who's closing the deal. He's just putting the last touches on it. And he comes back in with, oh, I was made, and you were made. So I think at this point, they've both gotten where they need to be. That is a bed full of satisfied individuals. But he's contemplating round two here with, I can't get enough. No, I can't get enough. Kelly, any further interpretation of I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss?
No, actually, if you don't want to be, you know, if we don't want to be, that's a nice thing to say to somebody. So if we want to be in a romantic sense, I guess, like, that's actually a nice, if it's someone that's in love with you or cares about you. I mean, to feel like someone's made for you is actually kind of, you know, that's kind of sweet. But
all right, hold on. Time out. I fell off. And when I was here, I was trashing this guy and saying he's like a bane on the music industry. And I come back and you're saying that this song should be a wedding song? What's going on?
Not a wedding song. Not a wedding song. I'm trying to just... Steve goes off the rails and now I know you go off the rails. So I'm just saying that is a nice thing to say. Although this is probably someone she just met today. So that's not nice. But I was just trying to say, not a wedding song.
Hey, imagine this.
Each their own.
You're at the shelter in Detroit watching this new band. All you know is that they rock hard. And this motherfucker comes out with a star painted around his eye and leather pants.
No.
With his 2.5 star dong sticking out.
Calm down.
And next thing you know, you're at the Motel 6. And you're about to get on with the star child.
Hey, hold on. Time out. This is Kiss. You're clearly not staying at Motel 6. You're at the Hilton.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, you do the thing. You're happy. He's happy. And he looks at you and says, I can't get enough. No, I can't get enough. And next thing you know, the star child is back for round two. If you were in it for the one night stand banging sleazy dudes with skeevy leather pants, you know, that's probably the ultimate compliment you're going to get.
Yeah.
So this is definitely going to be my wedding song if I ever get married again.
We're holding you to that.
Okay. All right. Hey, going to be sung by Paul Stanley in acoustic version on the beach in Hawaii.
I don't care if I'm invited.
You know,
I'm coming to that
wedding. If
it was
done in that manner, it would be a good – I mean, if it's all about that. Like, if it's stripped down to an acoustic song, it's probably not that bad. So.
Okay. I'm all for it. But he has to sing it like he's David Bowie. You know what I mean? Okay.
You guys, that's very specific. Let me know when you find the person that does this for you.
She's going to sing Kiss, I Was Made for Loving You acoustically, but in David Bowie's voice.
In Hawaii.
We never went on to the... Come on. Now, Steve, is this idea that I'm upset that, like, Kiss and Alice Cooper and Rod Stewart and all of these other artists of the 70s, who I love their output in the 70s. I love their music in the 70s. All went disco at one point in time and had huge disco hits. Should I be upset about that as a fan? Or does that just make me a homophobe and a racist?
I don't think it makes you a homophobe as a racist. As a music fan, you are certainly well within your rights to ignore that portion of the catalog, especially with careers that have gone so long. Think of it as you have this kid, right? Mm-hmm. And around the time they hit 14, they go into this weird, different phase, whatever it may be. Complete opposite of whatever it is you have envisioned for that child. You know, maybe you're not getting along for a couple years, but on the other side of that, you know, you're both still there, you're reunited, your bond gets stronger at the end of it.
Okay.
You know, with your relationship with,
By the way, that never happened with Rod Stewart. Just so you know.
That's because Rod
Stewart crossed that path. I mean, this was a guy who wrote some great 70s rock songs, like nasty, sleazy songs with Ron Wood. And he crossed that path, and that never happened. It's like you ran away at home at 14, and you never came back.
That's because Rod Stewart has looked like a lady bowler for 50 years. You should have known better than to put your faith in Rod Stewart. That's a conversation for another day.
The next episode.
That's right. But, you know, I never thought about the tie-in with the disco backlash being related to the minority community latching onto disco. You know, I think there could be a seed of something there, but I don't think you not liking disco music immediately ties you into that backlash. You know, just because you don't like disco, just because you don't like disco does not also mean that you don't like these people. It could just be that, hey, man, that's not your thing.
Right. Okay. Okay. I'm okay with that. And we are doing a Queen song next time I'm here. We're doing a Queen song. We're doing country. Okay. We're doing Rod Stewart.
So you're going to be on 17 and 20 or something, 25.
If you could find a song with Queen doing country, we'll do the whole hour just on that.
Dude, that's it. The crazy little thing called love. Done.
Oh, bullshit. All right, guys. Next time on Songs Are Friends, I have picked a song from 1997. It is a song that's been covered more famously by a couple of artists, but I'm going with the original. That is Daryl Scott's You'll Never Leave Harlem Alive, which is a country song.
What?
You'll Never Leave Harlem Alive. It's a folksy, old school kind of country song.
Sounds racist as fuck. Anyway,
it is not. It is more about a coal town and how you know, poverty perpetuates poverty, essentially. Will be the theme of that. Kelly.
So it's equating like West Virginia with Harlem and that, hey, we're all in this together.
No, Harlan, as in Harlan, Kentucky.
Oh, I heard Harlem. So I was like, what is going on?
I was like, yeah, go to Harlem and a black person's going to kill you.
My God,
like,
no.
That's what I heard.
That's what I heard too. So I was like, oh, gosh.
Although, as someone who lives in Kentucky, if you're a black person listening to the show, you should probably not go to Harlan. It's not in your best interest. It's one of those old – it's where Colonel Sanders is from.
Okay. Oh, hey, do they have a Colonel Sanders museum? I'd like to go see that.
I think they actually do.
I'm sorry. I'm going to Harlan with black people. Sorry.
All right, Kelly, what is your pick for next time?
Oh, this probably is going to sound way off the rails from this. We're going to do Vanilla Ice song. So, yes.
Please tell me it's the Ninja Turtle rap.
No, we're doing the Ice Ice Baby. I have to do it, so it's time.
Okay, but time out. You cannot do Ice Ice Baby without discussing, one, that they stole it from Queen.
I know, that's the whole reason I picked.
And two, that Suge Knight and his goons from Death Row Records held Vanilla Ice over the rails or whatever and threatened to drop him into the street below unless he signed over the rights to Death Row.
Will, you can send me your notes and I will make sure that they make it.
This is going to happen. I'm just letting you know. Like this.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
I'm going to send you like talking points on Ice.
Okay, all right.
I lived that era. Okay, I had Vanilla Ice hair at one point in time when I had hair.
Can we have a photo for that so we can use it for that song?
No. Cannot.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right, guys. Yeah. You can follow Kelly on Twitter at KelGene17. You can follow me at Not Dr. Death. That's NotDrDeath. Or follow the show proper at PTBN_songs. And as usual, the email inbox is open at ptbnsongsoffriends@gmail.com.
And I cannot be followed. Ow.
Do not follow Will or he will have to shoot you.
I don't carry a gun. I'm sorry.
For Will and Kelly, this is Steve. Thanks for joining us. We will try to do better next time.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of The Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceForNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place for Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceForNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceForNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceForNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Yeah.